todo el mundo.
But this was really
1981.
Welcome to the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast. I'm your host, Stacey Lane Wilson, author of the Rock and Roll Nightmares book series and director of the documentary The Ventures, Stars on Guitars. This is your destination for all things rock, where the interviewees include musicians, authors, historians, filmmakers, and more. And now, on to the show. Welcome to the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast. I'm your host, Stacey Lane Wilson, and today we've got a guest who truly embodies the spirit of rock and roll. Ronnie Lee is a powerhouse singer, songwriter, and guitarist whose career stretches back to the 1970s LA rock scene. She was a member of the legendary punk band Venus and the Razorblades, wrote songs for the Runaways, and has shared the stage with some of rock's biggest names. But she's not just about legacy. She's still out there tearing it up, and she's got a brand new EP, Feels Good to Be Bad. It's a high energy blend of killer riffs, haunting violin, and Ronnie's signature fiery vocals. We're going to talk about all that, plus her experiences in the ever evolving world of rock and what keeps her passion burning after all these years. So let's get into it. Please welcome the incredible Ronnie Lee. Welcome to the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast, Ronnie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, I listened to your new EP, Feels Good to Be Bad. So much fun. Yes, really rock and roll. And it features what you've called an awakening from some ancestry information that led to searching for one of your parents, which is not usual album EP inspiration.
It's weird content, I know.
How did that personal journey influence the songwriting process, especially for the title track?
Well, the funny thing is my mom has, without any, she has no music background, but she has definitely a rock and roll past. There was prison involved and drug dealing and all kinds of stuff. And I was conceived in the back of a Chevy in the 50s and kind of a little bit passed around. In fact, I'm writing a book called Raised by Wolves because it just proves that being raised by other people can almost be as good as having parents. She's still with us. She's still going, kicking, but we just have a weird past. So we don't get along. We don't have a great relationship. But so I wrote this song kind of for me, cathartic, to say, look, we all do things. We do things maybe that we think back maybe 50 years ago, we would have done a little differently. But then we do them and everybody does them. So the song is kind of it's about that, you know, kind of giving her permission to feel bad, you know, to feel good about things that she did in the past. And so I think we all write about things in our life anyway. So I've been on a journey to find out who my real dad is, found out who he was, who my family is. They're all great people. I'm Portuguese, apparently, well, which is no surprise, by the way. My mom tried to convince me I was Swedish one time. I go, yeah, I don't think so, but nice try with that one. Now, this isn't my actual real hair, but it's close enough. So then the rest of the songs are they literally, I just did a NAMM show and I played a lot of the songs at the show we did. And I said, you know, what's weird is I discovered after I wrote this EP that these are all about different times in my life. They're different boyfriends. One is about a husband. So I must have been something cathartic coming out of me, because that's what happens, I think, when writers or artists do projects. We kind of look at them like they get a theme, whether we want it or not. We sometimes don't recognize the theme till it's over. And I sit back and I'm looking at it and I go, huh. And I'm just one of those people. I like to talk about it because I'm doing a songwriters festival in Alabama next month, for instance. And we talk about what inspires us to write and how these things come along. It's always different things. So, and then Dirty Diana is just something that I just love that song. And I played with Jennifer Batten a few years back. She played with us and we did a bunch of Michael Jackson, of course. And we just kept that song. And then Lynn, who's the co-writer, co-producer, you know, I write the lyrics and pretty much the licks to everything, but he's amazing. He makes everything sound good and look good. And I tell everybody it's really Lynn's violin album and I just play on it because he does so many great violin parts. So the Dirty Diana is really shows what he can do on the violin. It's awesome. So
yeah, that's such a kind of an unexpected cover, I guess. At least it was to me. And it has kind of a different, it's got your own sound, but it's also still the iconic song. Actually, I understood a lot more of the lyrics coming from you than I did in the original.
It took me a minute
making
too.
It your own, you know, while still paying homage.
Yeah, no, it's you know, and I look at Diana a little differently than he did. I think it was, again, a girl that was dating somebody from the band and, you know, is kind of a classic Dirty Diana. But I sort of looked at it more like Diana wants to be what we are, you know. And in the video, she it's really a fantasy of hers. And then it goes back to her real job. So the video is really a fantasy of Nerdy Diana wanting to be Dirty Diana. So
well,
I thought we
great.
Had a lot of fun with that. And the record label that I have, actually, the girl that plays Diana in my video is actually Abby Ortiz. And she has a band called Vox. And she's on my label. And she just released Hot Stuff. So Hot Stuff and Dirty Diana got the same release within just a couple weeks of each other. So if you get a chance to check her out.
Well, I was just listening to, of course, the Donna Summer version at the gym the other day. It's on
really?
My workout rotation. Yeah, and a good friend of our family, Jeff Baxter, plays the guitar on that.
Oh,
yeah,
yes.
So, I mean, that's amazing. I have to check that out.
Check out Abby's version of Hot Stuff. It's awesome. The video, again, in fact, it's the same videographer that did both videos.
Nice. Are they on YouTube?
Yep. If you look up Vox, VOXXX, Abby Ortiz and Hot Stuff, it's on there. And I think it's featured on some of my stuff too, because of the label. So,
yeah. Fantastic. Well, I know that part of your mission is to make friends with musicians, collaborate with them. And one of the things that you've been doing is hosting the sort of unofficial NAMM jams for over a decade.
Right.
And you really, it's such a community. What's one of the most memorable moments, maybe from the most recent session, since it just happened a couple weeks ago?
Well, we almost blew off the roof, literally.
Oh, no. Was it really
because
windy?
We had the Santa Ana winds. And I mean, I had to put my guitars down because they were waving and, you know, and all that. But we have some of the most amazing players. I always tell people I'm so thankful because I have people that I just, you know, normally people would have to pay $60 a ticket for, and they just come and they do our NAMM jam. And I also play inside NAMM, you know, I did a show inside the NAMM at the Marriott as well. And every year I play kind of in and out of it. I like doing the pre-NAMM jam because everybody's still kind of excited. I tell everybody, we still have electrolytes in our system. We have a little few dollars left in our wallet. So we're ready. We're all excited about NAMM, you know, and then, and it really is a time to get together. I'm all about everybody just kind of hanging out. I love the collaborativeness of music, and not everybody has that approach, but I do. And I try to, I always invite, I always have guests. I'm doing a Rock Goddess show next month in San Diego, same thing. I feature mostly female players there, but it's not always like that. It's obviously a little bit of everything, but NAMM was super fun this year. It all worked out. Everybody got to play because sometimes timing gets off, you know. So this year it all worked out good. No guitars were damaged in the making. So
Well, how do these collaborative experiences influence your own music?
Well, you know, I don't know if the experience influenced it as much as the people that play it. You know, I will, like Thomas Bluge, he manufactures one of the amplifiers that I sponsor, you know, the Bluge amplification, and just watching him and Larry Mitchell, huge influence on me. In fact, it gives us a chance. We always spend some quality time together too. You know, we'll go out for coffees, we'll have, you know, lunches together, and we'll hang out after, and you know, into the wee hours, and we talk. And you know, Larry Mitchell is one of the guys that said, "Hey, because I'm about ready. Lynn's flying in actually next week, and we're going to record four of our songs that we've written on the last two albums as acoustic. We're going to do an acoustic version of them, sort of a punky kind of acoustic version, and just a very, very, very raw. Here's the song, kind of a thing." And Larry Mitchell is one of the guys that said, "You know, when you write music, it doesn't have to be a one and done. You know, that song can morph and take on a new personality." And well, I Want to Be Where the Boys Are, which, you know, I got, which was probably the most successful song I ever had with the Runaways and the gold record and all that. That came about because it's the first song I ever wrote in my life. And I didn't become successful with it, or I guess you can measure success by getting money, till the Runaways movie came out, and they used it in the Runaways movie. So, you know, and of course, when Joan Jett in the 80s, you know, had her I Love Rock and Roll, all of a sudden, because until then, the Runaways and Venus and the Razor Blades and all that was, you know, was all buried. But all of a sudden, Joan, we want to thank her for that, have to give her that, because she brought it all back. And people started buying the albums and all that sort of thing. So you never know when your music will rise again, you know. It's like a phoenix sort of thing. And so sometimes I like to do that. And those kinds of ideas come from hanging around with these people that all have these different experiences. Kenny Aronoff is a guy that he does a lot of talking about this kind of thing. In fact, he's become a motivational speaker, and he's been on a couple of my albums, you know, drummer. And oh my gosh. Well, Larry Mitchell, like I said, Marco Mendoza, tons of experience. I mean, all these guys, you know, Cherie Curry, we're still close. You know, everybody's had all these different experiences in their life and in music. And when you come together like that, that's the time to share them, because it's not like we're calling each other, you know, typically we're busy. So these times, and NAMM is one of those times when people all over the world get together. Yeah. You know, my friend from Germany, my friend from over here, the East Coast guys, the Southeast, the Southwest, and it's the only time that ever happens, because otherwise we're just meeting each other on the road, and occasionally on a late night text, you know, we'll start talking because but there's always got to be a reason. We rarely just, I do chat with a few of them because we're real close friends. Me and Larry Mitchell will chat about all kinds of stuff, but it's usually music related, music business things. So I think that's the best thing that comes out of that. And I know that that's what everybody else does too, because they'll say, "Oh, I saw Nuno Bettencourt." Nuno's another guy that has all these great philosophies, and you know, he's a really interesting guy. If you've ever watched one of his shows, it's half talking, half playing, you know.
Oh wow, that's great.
Yeah, he's great. Also Portuguese. Anyway.
There it is again.
Keeps popping up.
How has your approach to guitar playing and songwriting evolved over these decades?
I think much, much more kind of melody based these days. And You know, it's funny, even though punk rock was the thing that started me, I was never really a punker. Kim Fowley was a guy that put bands together and said, this is what you look like, this is how you play, these are the songs that you write. In fact, I have three songs just before he died that he gave me to write, and I haven't finished those yet, but I have his original writings of his lyrics. But with his controversy, I decided to put them away just for a little bit till things
Yeah.
like came down to a dull roar. But not just that, I just haven't had the chance, and I'm not I don't typically write a lot of punk music these days, but I've always been a kind of a classic rocker. I've always been a you know, I love Zeppelin, later on Heart, who also was influenced by Zeppelin and the Stones and Black Oak Arkansas and that kind of stuff, you know, is my influence. And obviously Van Halen, but Van Halen's later. Van Halen, the guys and I were playing at the same time, you know, at the same, in fact, they were even before they were signed. And I do have some funny stories about that I'll share with
I
you.
bet those will be in your book, I hope.
Oh yes. In fact, I've
Yeah.
helped a lot of the two guys that have written about, I say Greg Renoff did sorry, Greg, I'll think of your name of your book in a minute here. And another Eddie Van Halen book, I helped those guys. I give them some details and some stories, you know, because I was there, you know, and played with them a number of times and had quite a few fun experiences. Most of them were fun.
Well, even the
Yeah.
ones that weren't always shape you as a person.
Yeah, those are the
Yeah.
things you remember, you know. But
Absolutely. Character builders, we like to call them, right?
being a girl back then, I was told, quite frankly, you girls don't play rock and roll. You know, you can do this, you can do that, you can do everything. And it's always been a boys' club, always will be a boys' club, probably. It's still a boys' club. I don't mind, but I just tell everybody they could take away my card any day, because it's just how it is. It's an industry like that. There's lots of women in it now, so it makes it a lot easier. But there's that one little sliver that's still, yeah, you know. And honestly, it's okay with me, because I love it. I love that whole vibe, and that's why I wrote I'm going to be the boys are. I just want to be let into the club just a little bit, and play here and there, and do my thing. And I know that I know tons of men that are so great about it, and I know a few that aren't. So, you know, but there's also some bitchy women out there too. So whatever.
Well, that's
Oh.
just a microcosm of the world, isn't it?
It's just how it is, you know. And I tell everybody, you can't fix it all, and I don't really want to, you know. It's the personality of the industry, and you just have to be. I tell everybody, and Joan says the same thing. We have a very like-minded about that. You just have to be twice as good to be considered half as good. You just gotta be good at your craft. And so, to circle way back to your original question, or one of them, my writing and my guitar playing has changed immensely. Hopefully it's gotten a lot better. People that knew me back in the 70s comment continually that my guitar playing is much, you know, really advanced quite a bit. And I said, well, I hope so. You know, after a few decades, you should get better. You get more like, I know how this should be. And I always tell, I don't give lessons, but I do talk through things with people. And I go, look, if you can play what you're hearing, you're pretty close to being there. And I get frustrated with myself if I can hear it, but my hands aren't doing it. And I'll step back a minute and go, okay, this has got to happen, because once it's in there, I can't get it out. So I'm going to have to play it like that. It's just, you know, then I'm my own worst enemy. Like, really? Are you Yngwie? I don't know, but I'm going to give it a shot. My last album is very, you know, it's real, real driving, real sort of just a different style than I would normally do, you know. So yeah, like more Iron Maiden-y, I suppose, something like that. But every now and then, that I feel like that, so I just write something that way. I've always got a bunch of lyrics ready to go for something. You know, you talk into your phone. I could probably
Yep.
have 18 songs started right now in my notes. And then I'm like, where's that one note that I had about that one thing, you know?
Yeah, well, I think it's amazing that you've been able to follow your love of music throughout your whole life, you
I
know?
have three kids. I had kids in the 90s, got married in the 90s, married a musician, took a lot of, didn't take any time completely off of music, but definitely took some, didn't do what I'm doing now. So, and I tell everybody too, I really feel like music is just, it's just expresses what's going on in your life. And I don't do just music because there's too many other things, you know. My one of my kids just got married, and hopefully, he'll have kids here one of these days, someday, pretty quick. So that'll be an interesting journey too, looking forward to it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I just have always had music in my life, and I don't know how to not have it. So believe me, it's pissed me off a number of times, and I like. In fact, I wrote "Last Lover" on two albums ago on my All Dressed Up album, and it's also on my Lifetime vinyl. That is not about a man or a relationship. It's about the music industry. And so when you listen to the words to that, you'll go, oh yeah, I could see that. In fact, it fits the music industry way more than it fits, well, it kind of fits both, but it's just a frustration that I was having at the time. And so, rather than act out, I wrote a song about it. A lot of pain and a lot of lives by doing that, that's for sure. Anyway.
Well, as the founder of Play Like a Girl Records, you're not just creating music, but you're also mentoring other artists. What's the most important lesson that you try to impart to emerging musicians about navigating the music industry because it's changed almost to an unrecognizable state as it was in the 70s and 80s?
It's that is the most difficult part because I work with younger people, and I think one of the misconceptions is they watch a lot of the shows, of the game shows like America's Got Talent and that sort of thing. So they think that their music in journey is going to start here and go here immediately. Like, okay, well, I'm and then what is it? What is making it? All these things, all these. And we all do. We have these preconceived ideas in our mind about how things should go. So one of the things I tell them, I go, look, anything can happen in the music industry. Primarily, a lot of it's luck. It still is, it was, and it still is. So when and if the luck strikes, you need to be ready. So you need to be good, and you need to have your tools in the toolbox. Okay. So don't just think just luck's gonna happen. And hard work isn't always rewarded, by the way. So you have to actually love this. You have to, this has to be something that you love doing, and the rewards will be there. They will happen. It's a journey. It's a road. It's just a road. It's not like you get somewhere. It's not like when you're climbing a mountain and you get to the top and you go, I'm here. You never get to the top in music. You're just going down the road, and there'll be highs and there'll be lows, and there'll be highs and be lows, and you should have try to enjoy them all. I don't enjoy the lows as much as I enjoy the highs, and no one will, but they're going to be there. And I think that's probably how life is in general. But with music, it's even more so because in regular world, you are usually rewarded by hard work and sweat and toil and a lot of determination. Music, it depends on what your rewards are, but a lot of people, for instance, of course, they certain amount of fame, certain amount of money. And I know tons of musicians that are massively talented that don't have either. I mean, I can name many, okay? And I can name a bunch that are getting a lot of recognition and making a lot of money that even though it's subjective, I would say there's probably other people that could do that a lot better in a nice way. And again,
Right.
not trying to be judgmental. I'm just saying that, and it all tends to work out. The people that are truly, deserve it usually do, last a lot longer in there. And they're, of course, and there's always the one hit deals. So that's basically what I said. I go, get ready for a long, long ride. And just try to enjoy the music. Every time I do a project like this one, I just do it because I all of a sudden I'll get inspired to put a collection of songs together. I always do a small collection. I don't do albums. I don't do singles too much. I will release songs as a single. And I'll call Lynn and I go, hey, I think it's time for us to do an album. You know? And he's always like, okay. He's my musical husband.
Yeah,
So
that's a great partner to have for sure.
yeah. And so
Someone
he's
who's along for the ride with you.
absolutely. I think it's really hard. You can't be an island in this business. You know, you really can't. You need to have those people that believe in you. I also tell people, if you don't have anybody that believes in you and you spend all your time on Facebook getting mad because nobody comes to your show, you might want to rethink what you're doing. And there's a lot of things that you might be doing wrong. You might be playing for the wrong people, the wrong demographic. They're on, you know, country music in a hip hop bar, you know, different things don't really work because people do that. Or you might not be ready for prime time. And guess what? You might not ever be ready. And sometimes writers try to be for performers, and those are two different sets, skill sets. They're not always the same. I always use Elton John, Bernie Taupin as an example. I go, completely two massively talented people who recognized what their skill sets were and used them in the correct place. So that's another lecture that I give. I did this thing on the I guess it was on, I can't remember what platform it was on because it was hosted by somebody else. I did Ronnie Lee's Rock Tips and I did a whole bunch of them. And I would do these little 2 minute, 3 minute, believe it or not, because I'm a talker, as you can tell, little tips on rock and roll, you know, and everything from what we just talked about to firing somebody from the band. And understanding, for instance, in your band, is this really a band? Is this really four people in equal partnership? Or are you a solo artist with backup people and hired guns that have maybe been in your band for a long time and think that they're part of the band? So I always tell people, watch Hired Gun. Watch the movie Hired Gun, and then you'll know. And I play in a band with Liberty DeVito is one of my drummers I use on the East Coast. And of course, he was with, you know, Billy Joel and that whole story, disastrous story that we all know about. And Kenny Aronoff has a bunch of those stories too. And they're both in that video, ironically. They have both drummed for me. So I know a lot of the stories that they told and a lot of the ones that they couldn't tell. And I'm just saying it's important to know what the structure of your project is. Very important. And lay it out right away, you know, because down the road that can be, you know, a story that you tell later that's not so good. And I don't like doing that to people. I think that people should be warned about that for sure. So,
Yeah, that's a great documentary. Yeah, I had the director on this show a couple of years back, but it's one of my favorites. I've watched it maybe three or four times, you
oh,
know.
me too.
It's
And Rudy
great.
Sarzo, you know, I really tell every musician, I go, that you need to watch it. It just should be required watching to be a musician.
In the curriculum for
When you're
sure.
getting your certificate of musicianship, one of it should be watch Hired Gun.
Yeah. Well, it
It's
sounds like you could write a few books, a memoir, you could write a how-to book, you could write a cautionary book. What is going to
yeah.
be the upshot of your upcoming book?
I think the upshot is because I was truly raised by sort of a ragtag group. I think it's really to that. I also know people that blame a lot of things maybe that didn't go so well in their life on, well, you know, I didn't have this, I didn't have that. And I said, well, you know what? Those things, there's can be positives. You got to grab those positive things from those positive people. And because at the end of the day, you need to win. Okay. You need to win the game. And that can be measured in a lot of different ways. It can be measured by family, by money, by friends, by music. And the more things that you can overcome, the more likely those things that are important to you will come along. And I had, it's funny, I was just talking to my brother and we were saying that, you know, different people in my family had the same crappy start that we had, but we all chose different paths. And why did we do that? What was the denominator that made that happen? So those are some of the things that I'm talking about. So I guess in the end of the day, it's to encourage people that have that, because it seems like more and more and more and more people now have this, you know. And I get a lot of excuses. I get a lot of excuses from musicians. Well, I can't do this because of that, because I go, really? Because I have like 10 times that. So I don't want to hear about it. I mean, I'm a nice person, but I'm also kind of a hard ass when it comes to that. Because I'm like, because it's for their own good. And when you're a parent, it's the same thing. You know, I don't want to hear that. I want to hear, how did you overcome that? Because we got to get up tomorrow, and I don't want to hear a bunch of whining about everything. You know, let's have our little whining moment and let's move on. And so, you know, and I do, I have girlfriends that I call and I go, oh my God, this is driving me nuts. And then I move on, you know, because I think you have to. And I guess it's a survivor thing, you know. And one guy told me one time, he was an old blues guy. And he goes, you know what you are? And I said, what? And he goes, you're a scrapper. And I did not know what scrapper meant. It's like a deep South term for people that survive shit, apparently. You know, in the 70s, I hitchhiked up and down the I-5, and I mean up and down like the entire coast by myself. And some of the experiences that were not great. So I don't recommend it, kids. Any of the stories in the book, don't do any of them.
This leads me to my exit question. What is your
Sure.
own personal rock and roll nightmare?
Oh, well, I thought about it, and there I was gonna say talk about the hitchhiking thing, but that was be a little too dark. So I'll tell you about the one at the Whiskey when I was getting ready for a show with Van Halen. So we were, and Joan was there, and we were all rest. We used to wrestle. It was a big thing to wrestle back then, and because we were like tiggers, we bounced. You know, we were indestructible. You could just throw us around and just. We put our shoes through the wall at the Whiskey. In fact, the wall was covered with autographs from all these amazing bands. Now I don't know where that wall is. I've been looking for it. And we got this bright idea to get on each other's shoulders. And I was on David Lee Roth, and Joan was on probably Mike's or whatever. Eddie was always in the back noodling. Nobody, he never participated. But we were wrestling on each other's shoulders, and then David decided to put me in a barrel and roll me down the stairs of the Whiskey. So that was probably the most terrifying moment. And we were all nice and hyped up at the end, and played a great rock show that night. So I was like, I don't know if this is a good fit. And so, and he was every bit as much as he looks like he was. He just had no restraints, and there was no rules back then. Nobody had parents. We never had a parent in sight. We were all underage. I don't know how we survived. It was ridiculous, but we did. The drugs were flowing. We had them around our necks, and just,
Well, I'm glad you did.
I'm
You're here
glad
to
we
talk about.
survived. And like I said, don't try any of this at home, kids. But yeah, we really scrapped it up. We literally had fights. Not mean, not we not angry ones, but just like that's how we pumped it up. It's like now I can't even, you know, no. Now just getting up and down the stairs at the back of the Whiskey, I'm like, this is exhausting.
It works
But
that
I know
barrel when you
though,
need it. It'll help you get
I
down the
play the
stairs.
Whiskey quite often. I just played there not too long ago. And every time I go up those stairs, I think about that. I guess it was a little bit traumatizing. Every time I walk up those stairs, I go, oh my God, I remember that day.
That's
So
a great story.
it sticks with you.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Sure.
And before you go, please tell everyone how they can find your new EP, Feels Good to Be Bad.
Feels good to be bad. Spotify, we distribute through Orchard, which is Sony, so it's pretty much everywhere. It'll be everywhere in all the music platforms, but you can also visit my website at ronnieleegroup.com, and it's all there. And I even have actual CDs, but these
Oh,
I know, right? I'm old school, and I'll
wow. Can
probably
you
be
hold that
doing,
up a little bit longer? Let me see.
yes, I'll
That
be
is
doing, yeah.
awesome.
So I'll probably do this on a vinyl as well, because I'm a big vinyl sucker right now. I'm upping my collection, and everybody else is doing it too. So I also have a vinyl on my website. There's a store on there and everything. We have these necklaces, these Play Like a Girl
How
guitar pick.
beautiful.
They have the black ones and the silver ones, and lots of merch. In fact, of course, artists make, this is how we support things now, is merch. So I got cool little hoodies. all kinds of little. Well, I used to have underwear, but I'm out of the underwear right now. For some reason, people like the underwear. The little boy shorts, the play like a girl boy shorts. We're out of it at the moment, but we'll have more. But yeah, so please visit me. We're all music is soul. I appreciate it.
All right, RonnieLeeGroup.com. All right, thank you so
Thanks.
much.
Thanks. And thanks for everything. Thanks for having me.
This concludes another episode of the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast. Remember, there's a book series too. All the books are available in paperback, ebook, and audio via Amazon or the Rock and Roll Nightmares website. That's ROCK-N-ROLL-Nightmares.com. Our official theme song is She's Out for Blood by Fuzzbuster, founded by Lars Cabot. Thank you for listening.